welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. It's been a while. I'm Jack Swindlehurst, and we are back recording and podding for you. Plenty to talk about for Cambridge United. Introducing Jordan Warland. Hello.
Hiya, Jack. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Tom Walker, another familiar face.
Hello, mate. You're right.
Very good, thank you. And a familiar face for the pod, but not as regular as the other two. We have Mr. Matt Ramsey.
Thanks for having me back on.
Great to have you in. Right,
I'm sure you're fairly regular in some ways.
Let's hope so. I'm not going to tell you that much.
Wow. Too much info early on in the pod there. Right.
Good start.
Yeah, let's get in there. A bit of toilet humour for you. Let's get in there. Start of the summer. So we are 6 days away from the start of the season, but let's rewind to the end of last season and go from there. You know, we've been a bit anonymous pod-wise, haven't we? But we've been doing plenty of work.
Yeah, we didn't do an end-of-year review, and I think that's because we couldn't emotionally hack doing it. Tom looks scarred just thinking about last season over there.
Yeah.
You okay, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm preparing myself for another season. I'm looking forward to it.
That's the spirit, son.
Yeah.
If you're not talking about last season, then does that mean it didn't happen, though? Can we go with that?
Well, I'd like to go with that. However, if we're going to talk about this season, I guess we're going to have to compare it to last season, and especially the squad from last season, and how we're not much different or better off than last year.
No.
At this stage, a lot could happen between now and Saturday.
It could be, couldn't it?
Perhaps we might sign a striker. Who knows?
It's absolutely mental that we're sat here 6 days away from the start of the season and we're still talking like that.
it's a worry, isn't it? Like the lack of forward power in that team. You know, you've got Abiré, who's in the winter of his career. I can think we can safely say that now.
He looks a bit trimmer this pre-season. I'll give him that.
He was fighting fit yesterday.
Hey, like that. What happened yesterday? Was it a headlock, apparently?
Well, I actually didn't see what Jabbo did.
Yeah.
It was quite entertaining what happened before that, because it's a friendly, because it would have been pretty outrageous had it been a league game.
Yeah.
Paul Lewis with a not particularly sort of malicious tackle, but not very well timed, so it was quite a late, fairly heavy one, which was would have been a fairly clear booking in any kind of game. But then the player of the opposition team got up, shoved Lewis, who had just walked away as if it didn't matter, and then comprehensively headbutted him. He didn't even sort of lean his head in. He proper went for it and sparked a melee, which was out of keeping with everything that had happened before it, and obviously not something... I don't think I've ever seen that in a friendly before.
And do we know what the rules are for the red card in pre-season? Does it carry on to your next friendly game, apparently?
That's what I've lifted
Which seems
off.
Bizarre.
It does seem very weird.
Is that right?
Apparently so, yeah. There's a lot of stuff sort of back and forth online about whether it will count for next Saturday or not, or whether it if it rolls over to like what will be our next friendly. But you would hope that by the time we have our friendlies next summer, one, we're still a Football League club, and two, Jabbo is not around.
And also, if it is true, then what's going to happen with the authorities if they say, oh, Jabbo's played 10 minutes in a friendly, let's kick him out of the league? It's not going to happen anyway.
So, yeah, I'll never be allowed to play a friendly again.
You would think that the club will have comprehensively looked into whether he can play against Bradford or not before they do, so that will give it away slightly after that. But I think friendlies are non-competitive games, and if you get sent off in the EFL Trophy, it doesn't count for league games. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that friendlies count for any more or less than that competition.
No, but let's look then at players we've kept and players we've released and players we've not got yet. So, you know, the retain list wasn't particularly surprising, Jordan?
No, it was a fond farewell and thank you to Mr. David Ford. Enjoy your retirement. I assume he's retired. I haven't seen where he's gone.
There's life in the old dog yet, mate.
Ozzedabi left. And fair play to his agent. He's got him another Football League club. Hardest working man in football. I think he's at Macclesfield.
Yep.
Carroll, I assume we would have probably not cared too much about if he'd gone or not, but he had already agreed terms with Motherwell. Lost a couple of the scholars. Watkins, Foy and Squire have all moved on. And then, yeah, we had that interesting saga where we had contracts out there for players for quite some time. Some picked them up and some said no. So Amu said no, and we'll line up against us this season for Port Vale. No out-and-out right winger, as of yet, has been brought back into the club. Halliday moved on, went up a league, and, yeah, I think that was the main kind of retain list. Like, Maris was... said he was going to leave, but then is back with us training this summer, so he might be there next Saturday against Bradford. Bire played enough games last year that he triggered an extension, and Deegan got offered an extra year. Thoughts on Deegan getting an extra year, Tom?
It is what it is. I've got nothing else to say at that point.
It's worth pointing out.
I was going to say, just kind of on that note, obviously quite serious sounding medical issues at the moment.
Yeah, blood poisoning for Gary Deegan. And it's probably worth pointing out, that's why Julian's not here today. He's outside the hospital, candlelit vigil, praying for Gary. We've not really heard from him, but...
Yeah, no, Julian does still do the podcast every now and again, but, you know, he's a busy man nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he went to a couple of games last year, didn't he?
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's not very inspiring stuff from the point of view of who Cambridge have kept. What's your opinion on the signings they brought in then?
I think that the players who have come in are quite encouraging generally, but we've got to caveat it straight away by going straight back to, are there enough of them? I think that people like Noyal, I have quite high hopes for, given the fact that Halliday was someone who was very highly rated. You think, well, we're just going to take a downward step, but actually, you know that the reaction of the Swindon fans tells you a lot, because if you've signed someone who was player of the season for another team in your league and who their fans were pretty furious to see come to Cambridge United, then you get the impression that you might be onto a good one. And he's looked pretty lively in the two home friendlies, which is what I've seen so far. People like Cannon, I think, could be a decent one as well. And he's not an Amu-type player at all, but he is a wide midfield option, and obviously there's not too many of them. So I think that if he starts well or poorly, that could be pretty critical, actually, which is maybe putting a bit too much pressure on him individually. But he's a good combative player as well, because I remember watching him play when he was 15, 16 in the academy, when CRC were a thing, playing quite a lot of games at the Abbey. And he obviously had something then and lost his way a bit, but he's done really well for himself.
He went back to university, didn't he?
He's from Norfolk Way, and he went and played for Dereham Town. And the only reason I know where Dereham is because I went to uni in Norwich myself, and then went on to Northumbria. And Northumbria University, I think, was managed by Neil Aspin or something peculiar, who then went to Gateshead and took him with him, and then he went up into the league. And has played most games for Port Vale for the last year and a bit as well. So it's a good trajectory for him, and I think he's the kind of player who I think could be quite a good signing for us.
If we care about reputation and comments from other fans of other clubs, Hannon comes with what? The reputation of tries really, really hard, but end product isn't really there. So it could be an interesting watch this season, see how he gets on. Noyal, on the other hand, comes with a great rep from the Swindon fans, like Matt said. And the two preseason games I've seen, he looks really good in that sort of right wing. Right back and getting forward. Maybe not as direct at running at people like Brad Halliday was, but looks quite good at sort of crossing the ball in. And I feel a little bit for Leon Davis. You've spent the last 3 years sat behind possibly the best right back in League Two. He leaves, and you sign possibly another candidate for best right back in League Two. Although Davis, so far this pre-season, they've been toying with the idea of playing him on sort of further up the pitch, more of a right wing kind of role.
I think the benefit that Leon Davis has is he's got an excellent cross on him. He becomes an option. If you're talking about starting to play wingers and he becomes an option, then that kind of tells you how light they are, because he has played, I think, a few times off the bench on the wing. But if you push him forward and have a good fullback behind him, that would be preferable, because Davies has always been slightly suspect defensively, I think. And I think that if he can be that attacking option, I don't think that necessarily means he's frozen out of the team, which obviously with Amu being so pivotal last season was the case, and he ended up going out on loan.
So a couple of people have been in contact. Thanks for all your questions, as always. Tom Neat and Wayne Lockwood have raised the point, which kind of follows on from that quite nicely. Where are the goals going to come from? Because we've spoken about, you know, the lack of strikers and firepower there, but also losing players like Brown and Amu, who, you know, are very, like, inspirational going forward. Is there a worry that we're going to really be lacking goals this season?
Yeah, obviously. Great. Obviously, that's the worry. I should have written down the stats, but if you add Maris, Amu and Brown together, their goals and assists from last year came to what? Maybe 50% of the very low number of goals that we scored anyway. So, yeah, obviously there's a concern. I guess it's worth pointing out at the time of recording, we've got Maris back on trial with the club, so he might not have left. And we've also got a couple of strikers on trial as well. But as it stands, if you pick a starting 11 based on players who are definitely in the club, mm-hmm. next Saturday, you've got Harvey Nibbs, who is currently nursing a heel injury, so might not be fit, and Jabo Ibire is our only recognised strikers, because I think Joe Neal's just gone on loan, isn't he?
He has. I don't think he would be someone who'd be ready either. And Calderwood said after the game yesterday that Nibbs wouldn't play against Bradford. Yeah. They're looking at maybe Newport or Brentford League Cup game for when they're hoping that he'd be back. But I think he might need a jab or something along those lines. So that might be best case scenario, which obviously raises the worry when it's only him and Jabo involved now. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I'll put it another way. I would expect there to be a lot of movement this week because clearly I think that people are quite worried about the lack of options. But if you start at Bradford and you've now got Obika in and Dallas in, who are the people who have been in on trial, then suddenly your options aren't particularly poor. And you've got, we haven't mentioned Houlihan yet, you've got Houlihan, you've got Maris, you've got Hannon and people. There are people with creativity. Harrison Dunk put in a brilliant cross in for Ibira yesterday as well. So you've got the potential for creativity and you've got actual strikers on the pitch. Mm. And if you maybe compare those kind of options with the fact that last year we had Adi Aziz, then maybe we're not quite so badly off. But obviously that needs to actually happen between now and Saturday.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Strikers over the course of the summer, isn't it? Because we've got Dallas and we've got Obika, like you mentioned, but you kind of maybe get the impression that they were not first or second choices from the recruitment team. And if we're only just seeing Obika playing his first trial game for us yesterday and Dallas playing his first trial game for us a few nights before against Leicester, I guess it's a precarious situation where we've got options, but maybe we are a couple of weeks behind the schedule that you would want as a coach and as a club for those options to be fit and gelling and in the team. I quite like the look of Dallas. I thought he looked all right against a very good Leicester defence on Tuesday night. Ibika yesterday started quite brightly, looked like he wasn't match fit and sort of faded away in the latter stages of the first half and second half. So there are potential options, and maybe what we're discussing is going to be out of date really soon before the Bradford game. But yeah, I guess maybe the frustration of the fans is that we made a couple of early signings in the summer and a striker wasn't one of them. But I guess it's the most in-demand position for clubs every summer, isn't it?
Yeah, James on Twitter kind of echoes that. And just, I mean, he asks a question that is going to be kind of be impossible for us to answer. But like, why are the next batch of signings being pushed back? And is there something larger at play than just taking time to agree terms?
These things do take time, of course. But my frustration and my concern is that, you know, we've known where we needed to strengthen, not just this summer, but in January and probably last summer as well, and probably the summer before that too. Mm. We knew that we didn't have enough strikers at the club and there wasn't enough, you know, kind of firepower within the club. And the fact that we're, you know, sat 6 days before the start of the season at the time of recording, and I know that there's trialists in, and I know that we're looking at bringing people in on loan and you know, kind of signing people on a permanent basis as well. But there comes a point when you've probably got to look a bit deeper than that. You know, you don't get unlucky, in inverted commas, so often without there being something wrong with what you're kind of, you know, your strategy basically with regards to bringing people in. And that's my frustration, that there doesn't seem to be, from my view, too much direction with regards to our recruitment strategy. I look at sort of Colchester, I look at, you know, a bit higher up the leagues, like Bristol Cities and Brentfords and teams like that, who've got a clear direction, they've got a clear strategy, they know exactly what they're trying to achieve with the people they bring in. And for us, it seems to be a bit sort of cobbled together. Like, well, it seems to be a bit, you know, who will do it, who's available, let's get them in, maybe, sort of thing.
Maybe the thing is, the larger thing at play in the background is that, you know, Cambridge United isn't as attracting a prospect as it may have been in the past. You know,
finished
fourth bottom of the league last year. The money is drying up. We know that Paul Barry is going to step away from his investment soon. maybe we're missing out on targets 1, 2, and 3 because we're just not that attractive a proposition. Maybe we can't offer the wages that we did in the past, or there isn't, I don't know, maybe there's a
possibly
bad reputation associated to the club because we, you know, how poorly we were last year.
Just to put a different slant on it, and I completely agree with the point that's being taken, because clearly we're looking light. But one thing that I think is worth saying is that there's a difference to the transfer deadline this August, isn't there? Because last year, the transfer deadline shut the day before the Premier League season started, and now is it back to the end of August or something? So it might be that, knowing Colin Calderwood's contacts, which is one big plus that he has, it might be that a few weeks down the line, we'll end up with one or two young loan centre-forwards or other positions from clubs that he knows. And obviously it's a risk, because for every good loanee we've had a lot of not very good ones. So it does remain something that could go either way. But in the promotion season under Richard Money, Kwesi Appiah spent pre-season with Palace. I don't think he played a friendly for us. I don't think he started the season with us. Yeah. If someone comes in like that and has the impact that he has, then suddenly where the striking issues comes from isn't so much of a worry. But
well, it is when you get to Christmas and they go back to their parent club and then off to another club.
At the moment, we'll take anyone to come in and get 10 goals between now and Christmas, I think. The problem is that it might happen. Obviously, something might happen between now and Bradford on Saturday, or it might be a few weeks further down the line, and so it is leaving it tight. But we do have slightly longer to get things done, and obviously Calderwood does know the people at the big clubs, and there are going to be some good players who aren't going to be involved in the first team.
That's fine, and I get that, and that's a good option to have. But for me, it should be exactly that. It should be a bonus to be able to bring someone in sort of during that kind of first month of the season. You know, Kwesi Appiah is a good example, and he's someone who sort of seemed to, you know, become available after the kind of summer that we'd had, and obviously he had a fantastic impact. And if we could sign someone of that sort of ilk who could come in and have a similar impact, that'd be great. But ultimately, the difference between that promotion season and where we are now is that even if Kwesi Appiah hadn't come in, a lot of the planning had already been done, and we already had a lot of the players in place at the moment. And we have to kind of judge this based on who's signed terms and not who's on trial, because we know very well, and we've probably found out this summer to quite a large extent, that things don't always go as you plan with regard to signing players. And sort of at the moment, if you look at it, we've got an injured youth player who's never played a minute of first team football, or certainly not enough competitive football to kind of know what he's about. And Jabo Abire, who is ageing and has at best mediocre goal scoring record. That's our two forward options, and you know, I get that there's still time and things like that, but it should have been done by now.
How great was that impact by Kwesi when he first joined, though? Maybe we should just talk about that
maybe
instead.
We should do like a nostalgic podcast and not talk about what happened.
A pre-season preview for the 13-14 season.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah,
I'm not sure there is much positivity around then. So actually, maybe I'm not saying we're going to do anything like that at all.
There was a lot of trust in Jez George then as well. Yeah.
Good times.
Sweet. Goalkeepers. Let's talk about goalkeepers briefly before we look ahead. You know, we're going to be positive this season. The pod is going to be brimming with positivity and goals, and then Julian will come back. But yes, Liam Arnold says, how do you see the goalkeepers faring without the experience of Ford and Pilkington, and who would be your number one?
I think Mitov at the moment. Yep. I think he starts because he was our number one at the end of last season. He did quite well. Looks like he's been doing okay in pre-season as well. Managed to watch the Leicester game on YouTube actually during the week, and made, you know, a series of very good saves against players who are, you know, internationally recognised. So on that basis, Mitov starts, but it seems like we've brought in good competition in Callum
Burton. They're similar sort of ages, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's good. And it was someone who, I think I'm right in saying, Pilkington actually recommended himself just before leaving. So Pilkington's a guy with, you know, a good reputation within the game. Obviously, he's gone off to Barnsley, is it? To kind of be their goalkeeper coach now. So you'd hope, based on that, that we've done a bit of homework there and brought in another, you know, potentially good young keeper. I think we look okay in that department. I wouldn't be as confident as when we had, you know, Will Norris in goal or something like that. But, you know, these are guys with good potential and hopefully can sort of move towards that sort of calibre. And
the fact you've got two people who are similar age. Mitov's obviously got a little bit more experience, but it's good for both of them that they've got both of them. I'm not sure they're going to be, if someone makes a mistake, you'd swap them in and out every game. That's hardly going to happen. But I think that Mitov showed in the Leicester game, if you can judge a performance in a friendly, then he had an absolute blinder. And I think it would be amazing if he didn't start as the first choice. But Burton made one particularly good save against Ipswich yesterday. Flapped at one cross, and that was the only kind of thing that looked a bit ropey in 45 minutes. So I think that's one area, famous last words, I guess, but that's one spot where I don't think anyone should really have any great concerns.
It's also probably worth pointing out that it's a good use of the budget, isn't it? If you've got two youngish guys in goal, probably not spending a lot of money on sort of like an aging journeyman goalkeeper. I think they're looking to bring in a goalkeeping coach, so hopefully I think that kind of guidance and mentoring will be replaced somehow.
I think there's someone already in place. Yeah. I think that's done and dusted. But yeah. I think that's another good point, actually, you know, just with regards to the sort of profile of player in terms of goalkeepers that we've got. And what was really encouraging about our sort of early business in the transfer window was that they all had sort of similar profiles, and there seemed to be a clear idea of what we were going for. Obviously, young players, good kind of resale value almost. Potential to really improve and, you know, kind of go on to higher levels and things like that. And that's quite positive in that area, I think. And like you look at Noyle and Hannon as well, you know, players with decent experience in the game, still young, still presumably quite hungry to obviously improve and obviously have ambitions of doing so. So I'm glad that we're, you know, taking that route with goalkeepers. And you're right, Jordan, I think in our position, I think that's probably what you should be doing, really.
Yeah, they both looked decent in the pre-season games that I've seen. Mitov had an absolute blinder against Leicester and must have woken up the following morning so devastated that it conceded three, because two of them really were just poor mistakes by people elsewhere in defence letting him down. But the other thing I would say is Mitov's kicking looked like it had been worked on over the summer, and it also looked like they'd been working on just in general how the defence works. So defensively pre-season, I think we've looked pretty tight, even when we've not had perhaps our first choice defenders on the pitch. And we've also looked to be playing it out from the back, as opposed to sort of lumping it long, which has had mixed results so far in pre-season. So I wonder if that will roll into the first game against Bradford next week.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that's a good summary. We've done well there. It's a shame not to see Pilkington on the bench anymore. That was always good fun when he was on the bench. But yeah, coming up in the second part, we're going to look ahead to the first few games of Cambridge's season and do a league preview as a whole. Welcome back, and we're going to dive straight into looking ahead now. Cambridge United start their season with a trip to Bradford on Saturday, and that's going to be a bit of a tough one, I think, for Cambridge United. I think we're all agreed. Bradford, of course,
walk in the park, mate.
Just pipping Cambridge to top spot of the alphabet league at
first
the moment.
First against second clash might be the only time we say that this season.
First against second clash, yeah. Do we think that's going to be that's going to be a tough ask, isn't it, to get anything from that?
That's for me, probably the toughest game of the season. Well, on paper, obviously, we've yet to see how it all plays out. I think it's good to get that one.
I was going to say it might be a good time to play them, because obviously they've got quite a few signings coming in the summer, so
obviously
maybe they're not going to be in full.
Yeah, it's always nice, you know, sometimes to start the season maybe at home and sort of with a nice sort of relegation favourite like a Macclesfield or something like that, but you would hope that maybe this gets us kind of right in there, right in amongst it straight away. And also we'll see where we are, because it's such a big test.
I think the thing as well is it's not just that game. Our first sort of six or seven games are all pretty testing.
When the fixtures came out, there's a chap who on Twitter, Simon Gleave, who runs
Gav Daniels. Graham Daniels?
There's a guy called Simon Gleave who runs Grace Notes Sports, which is quite a big statistics website. I think Simon Gleave, I don't know if he's a Cambridge fan or not, but he certainly tweets about them quite a lot, so he's obviously got an interest. He did a kind of a clever ranking thing where if you take Bradford to be second favourites behind Salford or something, and Newport and Colchester, and if you rank the favourites as one and the second favourites as two, and then the club with the smallest number over the first six games has obviously got the hardest start. Mm-hmm. He looked at Bradford, Colchester, Newport and said statistically on that ranking, Cambridge United has the hardest start of any team in the league. So it is, as Tom said, it's straight into it with a run of games.
It could really, there could be quite a distinct possibility of Cambridge United getting to Scunthorpe on the 20th or even Oldham on the 24th and still trying to pick up the first point. You know, Newport County are
we've been there before though, haven't we? We've had starts of the season where we've not got points till September and
used to that by now.
Managers don't lose their jobs and we'll throw some more money on some lone players to get out of it.
It is a really tough start though, to be fair.
Scunthorpe will be difficult as well, that game.
Yeah, they're all very tough. Obviously we all know about Newport. They've proved a tough test
bogey
themselves over the last couple of years. So that'll probably be about 8-0 Newport.
Yeah.
Padraig Amman, fill your boots.
Aziz. And
also there'll be fanzines on sale for that one.
Fanzine will be on sale.
We should probably get a mention of that because we didn't all mention it last time.
Yes, we forgot.
Yeah.
Going to have a great season preview in that fanzine.
Yep. And a great crossword.
I should think so. Speaking of which.
But in all seriousness, it's going to be a pretty grim start, we think. And then, of course, Colchester will come up against Giovanni Brown.
Yep.
Yeah.
Turncoat.
I think it's just a tough league in general, isn't it? Because the teams that have come down, for the most part, there's not really any sort of nutcases or terrible teams in there. And the teams coming up are fairly strong as well. Orient will do all right. And obviously Salford have a ton of money. So, yeah.
That little mini
league of four teams down the bottom might be quite a tough one.
It's making quite depressing viewing because that League One relegation battle was like to the wire last season so and had like nine teams in it. And then, the ones that have come down are pretty big teams. You'd fancy, I'd fancy Plymouth to do all right.
Plymouth seem to always be getting promotion out of League Two. It seems to happen every, 3 years? And they've got what?
Most of the players, players as well. Plymouth are the team for me for the title.
I think
Plymouth and Bradford will be pretty confident they'll be in with quite a strong shout of going straight back up.
So should we point out that if Tom Walker backs a team, they'll finish bottom?
Yeah.
Do you know what?
So who is it? Bradford, actually, Bradford or Plymouth are going to do Notts County this year?
Because do you know what? This is pointed out, and I went back and looked at our season preview for that. I did say Notts County would. Wait, what was it? It was pointed out that someone I backed to go up went down, which is Notts County, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
And a lot of people backed Notts County to go up as well. They were the favourites for the title at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And the good thing is, we've got Dan Jones and potentially Elliot Ward from that team that would get Notts County promoted. So, outside bet for the playoffs, Cambridge United.
Good stuff.
But, yeah.
Do you want to move on? Or?
I'm trying to be positive. Now, what I want to know is, so we think Bradford and Plymouth looking like good to go up. Who's at that third automatic place?
You've got to talk about Salford. And also, it might just be because they did their business early, but Northampton have signed about 1,000 players.
Yeah.
As well, and they've got a lot of League 2 calibre in those ones. So they're one of the ones who I think are likely to be up there.
Yeah. And then I think, Salford certainly with all that money. Newport will fancy themselves, and Exeter, of course, as well.
Well, Newport have obviously got their FA Cup money, whatever's left that they didn't waste on Adi Aziz.
Mm.
Adi Aziz is out for quite a long time next season as well.
Yeah.
I think you can run off quite a lot of clubs ahead of us at this point because Mansfield have signed another couple of Bury ones, or at least what is.
Well,
it,
how are Mansfield doing it? Because I thought that their money had sort of.
Well, they sacked the manager and appointed. I don't even know who it is.
John
appointed. Was it okay?
Yeah,
I thought they went sort of shit or bust the last two seasons.
Yeah, they have.
And the money's all gone. But
I don't think it's all gone. They've signed again quite strongly. They've obviously got a strong squad from the past couple of windows as well, where they splashed the cash a little bit. I think Mansfield are a strong team. It's just about how they'll adapt to a new manager. Because Flitcroft was sort of okay, but probably felt they didn't quite get enough out of the squad that he was given. So we'll see with them. But again, the likes of Mansfield, Salford, Bradford, Plymouth, they've all got very strong squads full of players who are going to be very good at this level, or can be very good, or have previously been very good at this level. So,
Forest Green have just signed someone on a big contract from Peterborough as well. So they've obviously kept on spending money. Exeter are never too far away.
Colchester have been spending money as well, as we know.
So, yeah, there's a host of teams that could certainly be pushing for that.
Really, we are.
I think we've mentioned like half the league.
Can I just check with Tom? How are Grimsby going to do this season, mate?
They'll be all right.
I think Grimsby are going to go down.
Do you?
Yeah.
Someone in UTAS once a season has to annoy the Grimsby fans.
Well,
it's normally safe hands Tom Walker over there.
That's one relegation place done then.
Yeah.
That's good. There's only one left.
Grimsby and Cambridge United.
Surely it's Macclesfield. Macclesfield are gone.
I mean, it's going to be tough for them, but it's a little bit sort of presumptive, but I think Macclesfield season will start quite well, because they'll be on a high from obviously staying up.
But they've not been paid, have they? Macclesfield?
Yeah, they've had sort of financial problems going back for quite a while now, I think. But I don't think it's like necessarily club threatening stuff like Bury or Bolton at the moment as well.
No.
But like, I think Macclesfield will start off quite well. And then I've got a sneaking suspicion that Sol Campbell might get poached by sort of a middling League One club. Yeah. And then they'll just sort of plummet.
Mm.
And then they'll go down or be involved in it. We'll see.
I think Morecambe might be in danger.
Tom fancies Morecambe's strikers. Was that you that tweeted that?
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. They have strikers.
Not as confident.
I think that was the point that I was making. I recognise they've not signed the second coming of Bergkamp and Henry.
Yeah.
But they have signed two strikers in the week who would probably do okay at Cambridge and score somewhere between 5 and 15 goals. Mm. So that's something that we don't have. That was more the point I was making. But I think Morecambe, they're always going to be favourites to go down, because they have probably, behind Macclesfield, probably the smallest budget in the league. But they do what they do. They'll probably finish 17th or 18th, something like that. And, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, someone like Bury might go bust in the season. And then only one club will go down or something.
That was the thing. Well, Bury might not even start the season. Mm. They're in quite serious danger of that. I don't know how that would affect our league. I don't know if that would.
Well, I think they've called out saying that the Bury first game of the season might get postponed, and if that happens and the rest of the season starts, then you can't reshuffle the rest of the leagues. So
no.
If something really, really significant were to happen, then I think it would just be a 23-team League One, presumably, and you'd have three teams come down to meet the four that go up from League Two and one relegation out of League Two. But obviously, it remains to be seen quite how
our odds are getting better.
I think it's a sign of everyone's pessimism around the room that we're talking about, hoping that a team goes bust, really, because which obviously, hopefully, will not be the case.
You wouldn't wish on anyone, would you?
No, of course.
But yeah, I don't think we'll be quite as low as you guys are. But let's hope that there are at least two relegation spots being filled.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an interesting one to see how Cambridge United fare. And you know, we've said it, you know, a million times. This is a very difficult start, but this week very important. You know, from what might be finalised and announced. Of course, we didn't really touch on it, but of course, Wes Houlihan has been the big story of Cambridge's summer, being at the club.
Messi. Messi.
Can I just play devil's advocate for a minute?
Yeah, I know what you're going
to
say.
Obviously very happy, as I think everyone would be, if Wes Houlihan was to sign for us, because he's a player with immense sort of pedigree, and he's had his career at a very high level internationally and for, you know, Norwich in the Premier League and in the Championship as well. But do we think it's a little bit sort of, not dangerous necessarily, but a little bit, I'm going to say dangerous because I can't think of a better word, to be pinning so much hope on a 37-year-old who's, you know, obviously still got quality, who's playing for a Championship club last season, but to pin it on one player, is that...
I think if you can't get excited by the prospects of someone like him signing, then I think that's the one thing that people can be optimistic about. I mean, that doesn't mean that he'll play every week because he's 37. It doesn't mean he's going to score 40-yard pearlers every game he plays. But, I mean, there's not a team in League Two who would not want Wes Houlihan in the team. And when he was let go by West Brom, he was being linked with really, really big League One clubs. So that doesn't mean that him coming in is going to change us from being 20th favourites to second favourites or whatever you want to pick, but it can only be a really good thing. And I was excited seeing him line up in the number 10 shirt in a friendly against Leicester. So if it happens in a league game, competitive game for Cambridge United, then that's one that will lift the spirits, I think.
How do you think he'll fit in though, Matt? Because didn't you tweet yesterday you didn't think he was really in the game much against Ipswich?
Well, I mean, I was judging that against the standards of expecting him to score 40-yard pearlers every game, I think. Which is obviously not a sensible thing to hope for. Mm. I think that we could have the broader conversation about how you fit the midfielders into a midfield that includes width and wide players and looking like two centre forwards. But yeah, if he's fit and playing, then he must be part of that team.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I wouldn't play him in a 4-4-2 unless I'd maybe play him in a diamond or a 3-5-2. But I think he looked a little bit lightweight if it was just him next to, say, someone like Liam O'Neill in like a sort of a creative and a hard man, inverted commas, in sort of like a central two. But yeah, I guess it is dangerous because he will come with wage expectations. So if we don't necessarily get the minutes and the game time from him that we would hope, then there's a danger to a club that doesn't have a lot of money that it's not been spent the best it can. But potentially he's the kind of signing that might bring in a few extra on the gate.
Mm.
Might also help us attract some other players. Might be a little bit late in the pre-season campaign to say that bit, but it's potential.
As an ex-Norwich player, it was very clever to get a friendly against Ipswich so that they could bring 1,300 fans to boo him yesterday, which was a good move. Yeah, so that's already paying dividends.
Yeah, good.
I think it's not the shirt sales that Gareth Daniels has worked on have obviously gone well, but I think that might put a few extra names on the back of shirts as well.
Mm.
Actually, that's something we should talk about, because our kits are delightful.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Especially the away one.
Yeah.
Although I have been told that apparently it looks a bit like a bus seat.
Yeah, but I like bus seats.
But it's not as dirty as the bus seats I've seen.
No.
I think it's a really, regardless of the kind of players that have come in, the kind of mood around kids and stuff and is always good. And I've walked around Cambridge this summer, or the last couple of weeks specifically, and I can't remember seeing as many new Cambridge United away kits being worn by, I mean, not just kids, but kind of that's... it's a sign that they've at least got a hit there, which is a good news thing.
Yeah, it's a good...
Especially how badly the home shirt sold last season. It's possibly one of the most hated ones I can remember
in a
long time.
They were flogging them off, weren't they, at the end of last season for a tenner, I think, in the club shop.
I really like how it went to a vote for the away shirt.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
And Hummel have done a great job, and went viral, didn't it?
You know? There's some tie-in merchandise as well, because they've got some mugs and stuff that are in the same kind of design. So hopefully, if people stop going to the games because the football's not very good, then at least they're buying all their Christmas presents in the club shop.
Yeah.
Chevrons
everywhere. Literally.
Just all over the gaff.
I'm going to get chevrons tattooed on my arm.
One of the guys from One Direction has that.
Sweet.
He's not a Cage United fan, but...
Oh. Just a Hummel fan. Anyway, good. Glad we've managed to get One Direction onto the podcast today. That was my season's goal done.
There's another one ticked off.
Yeah, right. Coming up in the final part, we're just going to look generally at the state of the club and, touch on the new fans initiative and what happened there, and take some of your questions. Right, now for the final part of the pod. We take your questions. Thanks very much for sending them in, as always. It's at AbbeyStandPod on the social media platforms. And, yeah, Twitter is where we get most of them from, so thanks for them. Let's kick things off with Nick Mobin. And he asks a pretty obvious question, but a good one. How do you think we will do this season based on results in pre-season? I would say, as a caveat to that question, also performances. You know, results... You know, there's only been one win, I think.
Yeah, I've not seen too much of us so far. Obviously, the games in Scotland being behind closed doors, and don't seem to have played that many games either.
I don't feel.
But what I have seen, I've been reasonably impressed with. Obviously, the Leicester game being the main one. It's obviously very hard to judge against a team like Leicester, but nice kind of. Solid foundations defensively, reasonably strong, albeit a couple of pretty poor mistakes towards the end of the game. I think we'll probably be a bit more compact this season. Defensively minded, I think, probably. I know Calderwood said that he would maybe look to change the style once he's had a window to bring in his own players, but I'm not sure if I buy that, to be honest. I think it'll be similar sort of kind of tactic. Try and not lose, basically. And how do I think we'll do across the season? Again, it is tough to say because, of course, there's quite a busy week ahead, you feel.
Yeah.
But if I'm judging it based on now and the squad that we've got available to us signed up, it'll probably be more of the same, I'll be honest. I can't be too much more optimistic than that, unfortunately. There's glaring problems, which we've known about for so long, which still haven't been addressed. There's areas of the pitch which just don't look good enough in terms of the quality that we've got. But like I say, it's kind of if buts and maybes, but you would think that there's probably business to be done. So depending on that, maybe we can look up a little bit, but as it is, probably not so good.
If we start with Houlihan, Maris, two strikers, then I'm not quite sure we're relegation scrapped to the same extent.
No.
Obviously, I mean, we've already said several times in this recording, it's if a lot of the time with those kind of players. I think the fact that we went through so many teams as being contenders means that we're not being silly enough to put ourselves in that kind of category unless we really do something shocking like sign a 30-goal striker.
But yeah.
I think that the two home games have encouraged me, and the thing that's more pleasing is if you were to guess your first 11 or pick your preferred first 11, the people who are outside that have impressed me in pre-season, and that's good competition to have. Like Harry Darling came on, did well yesterday. Lewis John had a good game against Leicester. People like that, and we mentioned Leon Davies and stuff.
Mm.
I think that if you're doing that, you've got two strong goalkeepers, it all comes down to goals scored, because I think defensively we look good. The only concern on that side would be crosses coming in and headers from centre forwards, because Leicester scored two like that, and the one really good save that Callum Burton made against Ipswich was a header from a cross in the same way. If we can kind of snuff out those chances, then at least there's it goes without saying that the more you do to block things out defensively, you give yourself more of a chance, and if goals start coming at the other end, then at the very least I think we'll be okay.
Just pre-season in general, it feels like the club have taken a different direction, less games against local teams, obviously going away and having training camps and playing a lot of behind closed doors games. Obviously we had Forest and Fulham really early on. It's kind of, I don't know, I guess the results of how we do in the rest of the season will tell us if it's a good tactic to have, but it seems like a fairly impressive kind of sort of way of mapping out pre-season so far, and then concluding it with two really competitive and two very well attended home pre-season games. It seems like a nice kind of flow to pre-season. It seems like people thought about it and have used contacts and have mapped out really well, so that's impressive for the club as a whole. In terms of how we've been playing on the pitch, I think we've been looking really good defensively. I think Colin Calderwood teams are quite defensive teams, and it looks like he's been drilling in how he wants to play with them over the summer. But mentioned it earlier, it looks like we're doing a lot more sort of playing out from the back, so it looks like they've been working on that. It looks all fine apart from the final third of the pitch, and that's kind of the main concern, isn't it? Because that's what the problem was all of last season. We didn't score enough goals. The players that were involved in creating those chances or finishing those chances aren't here. But like Matt says, if we line up in 6 days' time with a Houlihan, a Maris, maybe one or two of the trialists or a lone Prem striker in, then I'd feel a little bit more confident. I wouldn't go as far to say I feel confident enough that we'd be outside bet for the playoffs or top half, but
be one of those seasons, you never know.
Can I just flip that one on his head a little bit?
Yeah.
What do you think the club's expectation is?
I think the club's expectation is safety.
Well, Calderwood says I aim for the playoffs. I've never not finished in the playoffs.
That's
apart
the way
from
it should be. That's the way it should be.
Well,
I've kind of thought this for quite a long time. Like, why would the ambition be just to survive? That's ridiculous.
No, well, there's a difference between expectations and aims, you know.
Yeah.
You should be aiming for the playoffs, but I think in real terms, they know that they are not in the top 12 teams in that league.
I wonder if, like, the money situation, and we're going to talk about other, like, those other stories that have come up over the summer, like the AGM with Paul Barry saying about the sort of investment ending and looking to get new investment in. I wonder if the management of the club is a tiny bit in flux about not being too optimistic about what they are aiming or expecting for the season or willing to spend, because they don't know the future financial position the club will be in. Maybe that will affect their sort of aspirations for it. But from the coaching side, Calderwood seems pretty confident and ballsy going into the season, of feeling like we should expect better than last year.
I don't think he'd have come to us to keep us up last season and then have another season like it.
No.
Because he could easily have gone and got a job in the Premier League or the Championship in a coaching role. And I think he wouldn't have come... It doesn't do him any favours. I'm sure he'd go back and get another job, whatever he does here. But it doesn't do him much good to come and be 19th, 20th or worse in League Two in his full season.
No.
I think that he would have seen it as a possibility to go and do something. And he was at Northampton and got them up out of this league, and they weren't... I don't think they were hugely back to do that. And he got them going. And last year he just did sufficiently well to obviously keep us up, but... You know, maybe there should be some expectation, almost solely because of him, because he does have that experience in doing something. And I'm not saying I'm backing us to really do anything, but I think that he is the one reason why you might think it's possible.
Okay, that's an interesting one. We've got a few more questions for you. This is a pretty brief one from Ben Yelton, but I do think it is. Good to acknowledge it. Is there anything worse than the Stevenage kit for this season? And I think probably not. I mean, it's minging.
Should we just say no and move on? That's
as
it needs to be. It's terrible.
The away one is just horrendous.
It looks like that's a Burger King employee. Yeah. And that's what you'd wear. Like,
it's weird they've got Burger King as a sponsor. Like, it's a pretty big brand.
Burger King makes you fat as well.
It's also really interesting.
Speaking from experience over there.
Yes, I am, yeah.
It's
better fries than McDonald's. Sorry, Matt.
No, carry on.
You're making football points. I'm talking carbohydrates. Go for it.
Are we done with Big Macs?
We're done with the fries, okay. Yeah.
Clubs seem to have an expectation that they're going to get viral tweets all the time by saying, look at our amazing new thing.
Yeah.
And Cambridge United nailed it this year because they've got two sexy kits.
Yeah.
And so they got all these kind of trendy... football hipster websites saying, oh, this is amazing. And Stevenage basically led with it, saying as if they were expecting to get exactly the same reaction, and they just had gifs of people vomiting.
Yeah.
So that's they didn't quite get that right.
No, similarly to Huddersfield, whose new kit is absolutely grim and has... I think that was a joke one,
mate. Yeah, I don't think...
Are you serious?
Yeah,
it's a joke.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes the Stevenage one even funnier, because Huddersfield was set up as a joke, got everyone talking, and then 2 days later they're like, no, it's not real. Whereas you look at Stevenage and you think, surely someone's going to turn around and say, oh, this isn't real.
Because you're not actually allowed to have a gambling logo that big anyway.
That's what I thought. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I think it's part of some sort of initiative, actually. I think I saw some club in Scotland doing
it. They've got Newport as well, actually, Paddy Power. They're sponsoring people's shirts, but not putting their branding on it to return the shirt to the fan.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that was my bad. But yes, Stephen.
Good to see you've been doing your pre-season research and prep.
I do like chili cheese bites from Burger King.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, never had them.
Do you reckon they'll be doing the catering for Stevenage?
Oh, I hope so.
Imagine that.
To be fair to Stevenage, brand new stand this season. They got investment from what's the old Chelsea player manager, Vialli.
Yeah,
he's involved. Their season ticket sales have gone up. I hate to say it, but things aren't that bad for Stevenage at the moment.
Well, they only missed out on the playoffs by maybe a point last season, so they, you know, they are a solid club as much as we would
he
take
who
to
laughs last laughs longest and all that.
Exactly. Well, we've got a better kit.
So exactly.
Yeah, screw you. Right, James WBB.
That's your... James Webb. Sorry, I missed the E out.
I thought it was like a triple-barreled surname or something like that.
Perry and G.
Yeah.
Crew.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely smashing the Burger King bit.
Yeah, I know, really good.
Just slice it again.
Right, James Webb says, what's your opinion on the next chapter comms that started?
Good, but you got to back it up. That's my thoughts.
Great, good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very easy for people just to slag off anything that the club does.
Yeah.
So last year was pretty horrible, so let's hope it is a new chapter. So they're trying to play on that by calling it exactly that. And yeah, I think that if things go badly, it's not because they've tried to market the club and get more people to come back to the games.
No, exactly. I think that's right.
So what exactly are we defining as the next chapter? We've got the fans' parliament. We've got the initiative they're talking about in the South Habin.
Yeah.
For the Newport game. What else is it? Is it just this commitment to more open communications and dialogue? And if that is the case, Graham Daniels, welcome back on the show anytime.
Well, I think that was, you know, not to blow our own trumpet, but that they used that, the club used that as a good platform.
Used us.
To talk to the fans and, you know, iron out a few issues. You know, there's probably still more to be said, if we're going to be honest. But I think there's more clarity and, you know,
there's
openness.
There's certainly openness. And you mentioned, Jordan, the supporters panel meeting that they've set up. They put an article out this week, which was quite lengthy, sort of summary of minutes. And they could easily sort of say, well, do you mind keeping this quiet? And obviously they're not going to give away mega, mega juicy stuff that might happen or might not happen. But actually the fact that they're working on things and letting people know what they're working on, they're basically putting right what a lot of people had as criticism, which was they're not saying anything. And even a few weeks ago when they were talking about, they put a statement out saying there's no news on the investment. And people criticised and said, well, that's not a statement. But they did it because it was the last day of June or July or whatever.
Yeah.
Last day of June, and they said we'll have an update for you by the end of June. So actually they're following through on what they're saying of just keeping people in the loop.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. I think that was the problem sort of throughout the last kind of maybe 3 or 4 years, where there would literally be nothing. So for them to just sort of come out and just put a very brief sort of, yeah, we're working on it, we'll give you news when we've got it, basically we're still sort of sorting out new investment, sorting out this, that and the other, I think that's fine. Like, obviously it's easy to criticise that sort of thing because they've not really said anything, but it's just sort of keeping fans in the loop a bit more.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing, you know, with the kind of minutes and the kind of summary of this meeting with the supporters panel, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a lot of it is we'll kind of see how it goes.
I was going to say, I think the important thing to remember is that they're may obviously be some quick wins under the next chapter, but there's also going to be a lot of things that will be more slow burners and take time to change. So I think one of the things is about the state of the match day programme. Okay, fair enough, that's not an issue when the fanzine's on sale, because you can buy that and read that and it's a better read.
Exactly.
But for the remaining home games, it's going to take a bit of time for them to sort of get kind of opinion and change how that goes. And I'm sure there's lots of other small bits around the match day experience or around the fan engagement which will take a little bit longer to sort of iron out. So I guess it's a two-way relationship. Like, it's good that the club are doing it, and as supporters we should be giving them time to do it, and also sort of suggestions in the appropriate way of how they can improve things.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I suppose the thing now is how they kind of hold them to account and how they kind of challenge them on a lot of stuff they're saying, you know, things like the programme, things like, you know, how the club's run on and off the pitch. Is all very well, you know, saying, yeah, we're going to work on that and we're really going to try and change things. And I think probably maybe one of the failings from my point of view, and maybe I don't have the right details, one of the failings of CFU is that maybe they weren't challenging that as much as what they could have been across the past few years. So if they can do that, then it can only be good. And I think like Matt says, it's quite easy to kind of, focus on what is essentially a hashtag, this kind of next chapter stuff, and just kind of use it as a bit of a weapon, to kind of, you know, a bit of an axe to kind of bash the club with. But it's just like, what do you want? They've been crying out for more communications, more kind of, bringing it back to the fans a little bit, and now they're doing that and they're still getting criticised. So it's tough, really. But good steps in the right direction, and long may that continue.
Definitely. And we're going to end with a question from Will Fellows that I feel might open at least one can of worms, but let's go for it anyway. He says, what's more to blame for recent disappointing seasons, a basic lack of money or poor recruitment? And kind of on that, we should also talk about business the other way, players leaving the club and why we're losing players to opposition in our league.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of referring to Giovanni Brown.
It is.
Gone to Colchester.
Yeah.
Yeah, frustrating one. But ultimately, weirdly, I think probably represents a bit of a plus for the club, actually. In terms of recruitment, obviously, it's not good to lose Giovanni, but in terms of their kind of strategy, that's kind of a bit of a plus for it. You know, you pick someone out of non-league and you sell them on for what seems to be a reasonable fee. All right, they've gone to a club in the same league, but we've got kind of 2 years of good service out of him. He's done well for us and we've made a bit of cash out of it at the end. Again, frustrating that he's gone to Colchester because he's probably going to tear League Two apart next season, I should think, and in what looks like a better team.
Look, if Colchester have the money to match what
exactly.
the club think is a good deal, he's going into his last year in the his last year of contract. They've negotiated a sell-on fee. Yeah, it's frustrating, but yeah, it makes business sense to pass that on, especially when we're in this position where we don't know the finances going forward. We don't know how much more money we'll get from Paul Barry, if money will come from new investment or whatever. If selling Giovanni Brown for, I don't know, six figures.
It seems to be sort of...
You know, somewhere between 100 and 350K is a figures that I've read online. I guess the truth is probably somewhere in there.
Yeah.
If that means you can then fund a couple more players, then I guess it makes sense. And if it keeps the club running for a little bit longer, it makes sense. I guess it's disheartening that perhaps maybe a few years ago, post-Man United, that would have been us. We would have been the club that had sort of a bit of money behind us and we're looking to invest in some quality players to get us out of the league. And so coming back to that question about is it lack of money or... is it lack of money or poor recruitment?
Yeah.
I think the answer actually sits above that, and that was poor running of the club when we had a bit of money behind us.
Yeah.
So we had money, we didn't use it wisely, we didn't recruit wisely. We then tried to mop that up with some other recruitment. We backed managers in the recruitment market when we perhaps shouldn't have kept them. So I guess it's more the running of the club rather than one of those two.
I think lack of money doesn't mean lack of good players in any kind of context, because whenever we talk about people being able to overachieve or underachieve, you can't have that conversation without saying Accrington Stanley and Wycombe Wanderers, and they came... Was it first and second or first and third in League Two? And there's no way that their budget was above bottom six.
Mm.
And they both had blinding seasons. And they both stayed up in League One last year. So they didn't have the money behind them. And they obviously recruited well. And I think that that's, in terms of just looking at the question, is disappointing seasons, in terms of on the pitch, I think that you don't have to have money to be able to do it right and do well.
Notts County had all the money. And they went down.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm referring to, though, when I talk about, you know, maybe like more of a strategy, more of a kind of direction in terms of what you're trying to achieve and kind of how you're trying to achieve it. Like Accrington and Wycombe being absolutely prime examples of that. They know exactly what they're trying to do. Yeah. Like Wycombe's strategy when they got promoted seemed to be kind of have quite a small squad full of quite experienced players like Rakin Fenwars, Mikael Smith, they had Nathan Tyson, players like that. And you know, have a small, compact squad and very good players.
Who was their fullback we were rumoured to be having on trial?
Marcus Bean. He's got unbelievable.
No.
Michael Harriman.
Yeah, that would have been a sign.
Yeah, exactly. Bit of a weird one. He's a right back, which is strange having him on trial. But I guess when a player like that comes, you know, is potentially available, you look into it. And Accrington obviously being the same, they pick up quite a lot of local kind of talent who maybe haven't quite made it at the series of clubs they've got located around them. And basically say to them, come, give us 2 years and we'll let you go at the end of those 2 years if obviously the interest comes. And that's fine. And Colchester's the same. They pick up a lot of young players from Arsenal, Spurs, like Frankie Kent, who they sold to Posh a little bit earlier on in the summer, I think came from Arsenal or perhaps, I think originally
from
Arsenal.
Well, Borough have like a great record of picking players up from non-league, don't they?
Yeah, probably not so much recently. They just seem to shell out massive fees for kind of quite established players in the league that they're already in.
Mm.
But previously, yeah, they did pick up some good non-league players about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But, and we seem to kind of lack that, and that's perhaps why we're not kind of going so well. And Matt's absolutely right. You know, lack of money doesn't mean it has to be poor recruitment. It doesn't help. But it's about kind of maximising the most out of what you've got to play with. And a player like Giovanni Brown is a prime example of doing that. You pick someone up for free from non-league who you've identified as having that potential to grow and move on for a big fee, and he's done exactly that. But you say, Jordan, destination is pretty irrelevant if Colchester are paying the fee that we value him at. Mm-hmm. Whether he's going up or down, it's not my problem to worry about Giovanni Brown's career progression. If we're getting the money in that we want, then that's fine. So yeah.
Nice and cheery.
we'll miss like his creative spark though, won't we?
Yeah.
Like,
because if you then replace him with Wes Houlihan, like, problem solved straight away.
Yeah.
And that's another example of picking up local non-league talent. Young.
that is very true. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary of that. And it's been good to be back on the pod. Good to be back broadcasting. Not too depressing because the season hasn't started yet, you know.
And the good thing is as well that by the time people listen to this, it'll probably all be quite irrelevant as well.
Yeah,
perfect. We've signed like five players.
It's been quite different.
Great. But anyway, yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Jordan Wallen, thank you.
Thank you. Buy your fanzines.
Buy your fanzines. Get in touch with us at Abbey Stand Pod. Tom Walker, thank you.
See you at Bradford, mate.
See you at Bradford. And Matt Ramsey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.